From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Salt Lake City residents are passionate about their dogs, and city leaders say the demand for more dog parks and dog-friendly amenities continues to grow. For months, officials have been shopping around a comprehensive plan for dog services, which includes adding up to 5 more off-leash areas in the city, charging a fee for maintenance and improvements in dog parks, and requiring a special permit or tag to ensure dogs respond to voice commands in unfenced off-leash areas. These and other ideas were floated at a community meeting last night here at the City Library, and today on the program, we're bringing you excerpts from that discussion. Plus, a soulful tribute to jazz legend Billie Holiday. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. As anyone with a dog knows, dogs love to roam free, and they can do just that in 7 off-leash areas here in Salt Lake City. But city officials say the demand for more dog parks is on the rise. As a result, they're proposing a new comprehensive plan that they say will better accommodate dog owners and their pets. On the table, developing 5 new off-leash areas, creating a ranger program to enforce the rules, and imposing a new fee or a tag to help pay for it all. Last night, the city sponsored a community forum on the proposal, and today on the program, we're bringing you excerpts from that discussion. We first hear about details of the plan from Ann Ober. She is Administrative Services Director for Salt Lake City.
To start with, I want to just give you an overview as to what we're going to discuss. We wanted to look at what's currently happening in Salt Lake City regarding off-leash dogs and their guardians, some models that are happening across the United States, and then some next steps for how we can implement some of the options in the plan or some ideas that are coming from the public. So to start with, we looked at key issues and some key questions on what does the public really want, and what do we need to look at in order to make a strong program? The first question was, are we providing adequate off-leash dog amenities? The second question was, is the quality of the off-leash dog amenities that we're providing up to people's expectations? Third, how we might pay for it? And fourth, how do we deal with enforcement issues in other areas outside of these amenities? Salt Lake City currently provides 7 off-leash dog areas. There are 4 other off-leash dog areas outside of Salt Lake City. There's Mill Creek, Mill Race Dog Park in Taylorsville, West Jordan Dog Park in West Jordan, and Sandy Dog Park. So a majority of the off-leash dog areas that are provided in the Valley are provided in Salt Lake City. When we compare ourselves to other cities in the United States of similar size, we see that we're actually pretty comparable to the services that are currently happening elsewhere in the US. So looking at some models, we wanted to better understand what these cities are doing that we might want to adopt. Boulder, Colorado has a program called their Voice and Sight Tag Program. Individuals watch a 10-minute video, register their dog with open space and mountain parks, agree to terms, and pay a fee of $15. Then the animal has to display the tag every time that it's in one of these spaces. Some things that Boulder has found is that even though this is an amazing program, they haven't seen any increase in dog guardians' ability to use voice control after implementing it. So they haven't found that when people watch the video that somehow their dogs are now more likely to respond to their owner's commands. There's also difficulty with enforcement because there's no teeth, and their recommendation is that other communities implement a testing requirement if they're going to implement this program. We also looked at the fee program that's currently run in Taylorsville at Mill Race Dog Park. And in that situation, residents pay a $10 fee to use Urban Dog Park, and non-residents pay a $25 fee. Those funds go into maintaining the off-leash area. and it helps them to manage their park in a really positive way. This is a funding source that would be above and beyond what the city already invests if we were to adopt this type of program. There's also national examples besides Taylorsville that are in Long Island, New York, Montgomery, Madison, Wisconsin, and Virginia. So we're open to the amount or how those funds were used, but our big focus was if we collect a fund or a fee from the public, then it needs to go back into the off-leash dog areas. Some of the communities are doing limited hours in traditional dog parks. So in Boise, they actually allowed for early morning and late evening hours in their existing dog parks. We see a similar issue where the dogs, if they're not in a fenced area, they like to run, which is what dogs do. So one of the things that we've talked about is whether or not we would partner a program like Boise with the voice and sight tag, so that you would show that the animal would return to you on voice command, but then if you had this tag, you could use some parks that were closer to home. We also learned through this process that we have amazing volunteers in our off-leash dog parks, and that a lot of what's happening in our dog parks as we stand is because of them. So when they see somebody who isn't behaving well or their animal's not behaving well, they're usually the person who says, excuse me, this isn't working and we need you to leave the premise. So one of the things that we looked at was, is there a way the city can empower these individuals to do a better job, or not even a better job, but to be more empowered in what they're asking? So we looked at, do we train individuals to deal with conflict management? Do we give them a phone number so that when it gets above and beyond what they can handle, there's someone that they can call who will come back and deal with the situation? And then is there a way we can recognize all their hard work and thank them for it? We do that with our other volunteers, but because these individuals really are just going into the parks, they're not necessarily registering with us. There's no way for us to thank them. So we'd love to do that too. So our next steps were that we have been doing a public input schedule. There's been over 20 public meetings. We also have had this on Open City Hall. And if anybody is interested in commenting tonight or at any point over the next couple weeks, there is a website at www.slcgov.com/Open City Hall. For those residents listening on the radio, you can just go to the Salt Lake City website and follow it through Open City Hall and get to that website to make comment. So we also wanted to look at, were we providing enough parks? Did people feel like we needed more? So we provided 5 options in this discussion where we could add additional parks. The first one is in a Rocky Mountain Power corridor. This would be an opportunity for us to partner with Rocky Mountain Power. It would mean that we couldn't put up fencing around the parcel because Rocky Mountain needs to keep accessing the parcel. But it would allow us an area for animals to go roam without structure. Right now, all of our parks are very structured. And so for some animals, we thought this might be a better type of amenity. If we were to do this once again, because it couldn't be fenced, we'd need to do a voice and sight tag with it. But it's an option, and we're really interested in hearing from the public if they'd like to see this developed into an off-leash area. The next one was at 2100 North, and it's a 15-acre parcel that the city would purchase. It is a ways from residents, but it's a large parcel, and it's hard to find parcels at this point that are close to residential neighborhoods in general. It's just 15 acres don't exist on the East Bench anymore. So this was a chance for us to purchase a parcel and to do something really unique with it. Rosewood Park has always been considered as an option for an off-leash dog area. It would be 4.5 acres. Rotary Glen at the mouth of Immigration has long been treated by the public as an off-leash dog area, but it's not actually an off-leash dog area. So we've discussed in this process the possibility of creating that. It should be noted that we would require a 100-foot setback from the stream bed. And this is to be in compliance with Salt Lake City ordinance, so we would fence that location. And then Fairmont Park has always had a off-leash dog portion considered in its master plan, even though that master plan has not been adopted. So this would be another location and option for the public to consider. We've also looked at changing the creation process. Resolution 52 is how the public would ask to create a new off-leash dog park. As we've gone through this process, we've realized that we don't just have off-leash dog needs, we have all sorts of needs from the community for new services. So what we're interested in doing now is actually using this as a model to create something that we could use for all requests for changes in our park structure. And we will be going through that process probably after we present this to the council, instead of in order to present it to the council. We talked about the tag and certification programs. There are two possible tags. One would be, as I discussed, the voice and sight tag. And that would be, you would have to show that your animal actually would respond to voice command. And then you would receive and go through some sort of training test. Then your animal would receive a tag and could go into those parks that were traditional parks for limited hours. The other option would be a neighborhood parks or an urban parks tag, and that would be a very low fee, similar to Taylorsville. We've talked with our animal services team that would probably be between $2 and $5 for city residents. For non-city residents, it would be substantially higher, and this is because non-city residents do not pay property tax into the maintenance of these parks, and so this would be a way for us to collect funding to go straight back into those parks to better them and to make them more user-friendly by the off-leash dog owners. We've also discussed the enforcement, and up front when I was giving questions, I talked a little bit about enforcement. Enforcement over the last 20 meetings has been a very hot topic, both in our parks and in our neighborhoods. This is because some people are frustrated that they're not able to get their neighbor's dogs into compliance, or that there are dogs running at large, or that they go into a park and they go for a run and a dog chases them. So we actually have been trying to figure out what types of options we have. One of the discussions has been for a ranger program, and the rangers would only be in Salt Lake City parks, but they would also deal with things from a child with a skinned knee all the way up to individuals who are stealing metal out of our sprinkling systems. We end up spending a lot of money on that every year. So these individuals would be just like the women and gentlemen that you see at Arches National Park. They're a friendly face, they do education, but they're also there to make sure that things happen in our parks. We've also been in conversations with animal services for the non-park areas as to making sure that we have set up a system so that people get the kind of response that they expect. But we do not have an answer on how we can meet this demand, and we're very fascinated to hear from the public if you have ideas on how we could meet your expectations in this part of our proposal. So that's all we have so far. This is, as I said, simply ideas at this point. We're going to be presenting to the mayor and then to the city council over the winter. If individuals would like to make comments, you're welcome to go to Open City Hall and to leave comments on any portion of this proposal tonight, and we hope to hear from you.
That's Ann Ober, Administrative Services Director for Salt Lake City, presenting details of a proposal for dog services at a community meeting held at the City Library last night. We'll hear more from others attending the meeting after a short break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Salt Lake City says there's a growing demand for more off-leash areas for dogs, and they're exploring ideas on how to enforce rules and help pay for new amenities. Officials organized a community meeting last night at the City Library, and today on the program, we're presenting a few excerpts from that forum. The panel included Ann Ober from Salt Lake City, Emmy Malutas from Salt Lake City Parks, Florence Reynolds from Salt Lake City Water, animal behaviorist Heather Beck, Patrick Leary from Salt Lake County Animal Services, and Polly Hart, director of the group Mill Creek Fidos. Here's Polly Hart.
Fidos stands for Friends Interested in Dogs and Open Space. We were organized in 2001 to stop Mill Creek Canyon from being closed to dogs, and Mill Creek Fidos was able to work with the county and the Forest Service to continue to allow the presence of dogs and off-leash, and they worked on compromises that enabled people to continue recreating with their dogs. I am here because I have huge issues with the proposal. For starters, Salt Lake City currently has a resolution from 2004 called Resolution 52 that it was never codified, therefore it's called a resolution, but it's not broken. We talked about this earlier in the summer on your show, and it says, the process is a community-friendly process directed at serving the interests of Salt Lake City residents. Anyone can initiate a park. It goes straight to the community council and the abutting neighbors to find out how they feel about having an off-leash area in their neighborhood. The current resolution addresses making sure that off-leash areas are appropriate to the existing park they're going into, that they are consistent with established use, that they will not interfere or displace with existing activities. They will avoid areas where children are playing, and they will address public health, the environment, and safety. None of those things are addressed in the current proposal. That doesn't mean they won't be there. It means they're not addressed currently. And the new proposal has written that new parks get initiated by city staff. So people no longer have that stake in it. We also have some major concerns with the Tag Ranger program in that it is financially unfeasible. Even Boulder, Colorado, that has been touted here, states that the tags only pay for the tags. They don't pay for the ongoing. They're once-in-a-lifetime tags, and I know here it would be an annual thing, but they still do not pay for the rangers. And as for the friendly face, Mayor Winder, or not Mayor Winder, I'm sorry, Sheriff Winder, spoke to the Mill Creek Community Council a few months back and said that the city was looking to use unified police as rangers. Men with guns are not friendly faces. And Mill Creek Fidos has had a long history with the city and the county, and we have worked very hard to educate people in our public parks. Peer pressure works best every time, and in the past we have had a very successful working relationship, but you know, so far I haven't heard our name mentioned yet about working with the city in the future.
And I guess I want you to respond to some of Polly's concerns first. Resolution 52, everyone can initiate where a park is, children will be protected. I guess the big question is, why do we need to revamp this process that we have in place already?
Sure. There's a couple of things that Polly mentioned that I wanted to address. The first is that this can still be a public-initiated process, and there's no interest from the city to stop that. We actually think that that's an important part of this process. And to be honest, it's a part of the process that happens every day for Emmy, which is that the public calls and they say, we have this great idea. We want pickleball. I did not know what pickleball was until recently, but evidently it uses a tennis court, and now we have some pickleball lines that we're putting into some of our tennis courts because it's an important facet of who we are as a city, is to provide recreational amenities
wherever we can, and to meet as many of the needs as possible with what we have, because there's just not a lot of land to go out and purchase. So number one, we fully agree that the public should have the ability to initiate this process. The second part is that we believe that we know that we have some important things that have changed over the last year. Emmy mentioned the new Parks and Public Lands Board. We didn't have it when we did this resolution, and so there's no requirement for any of these decisions to go through that board. But that is a sounding board for every decision that we make in Parks and Public Lands that changes the way we provide service. And so we believe that this should go through that board as well. It's changes like that. Right now, there's a requirement that we've been talking about as to whether or not we should have a one-year trial period. The reality is we don't get a whole lot out of that. And so once we make the decision to create something, why should people have to wait a year in order to then figure out if we're really going to do it? We'd rather do all of our homework, do it right, and institute the programming as we can and as it's available. So those are some of the things on Resolution 52. We think it's a great start, and we think that in a lot of ways the criteria and the process that's included should be applied to all of the requests that we receive. And so we're looking at a way to make this work for everything.
Patrick, I want to ask you about the current 7 off-leash areas in Salt Lake City proper. Are those existing areas working from your perspective as an enforcement office?
That's a very complex question to answer, even though it sounded very simple. I think what we see both within the city and likely within the county and within the other municipalities is that there is a demand, probably, very likely, for more space. Now, from an enforcement point of view, we have limited staff, and that's a discussion point with Salt Lake City right now, is how we would handle additional enforcement if that was required. But it is difficult. And so if the question, is it adequate, can we enforce it, I think is probably the wrong question to ask. Is it meeting the demands of the citizens? It probably depends on the citizen's point of view.
Say Salt Lake City decides to add these 5 parcels as off-leash areas, what impact would that have on animal control? I mean, can you foresee or even put a price tag on what kind of resources it would take to cover those areas, additional areas?
I think we would certainly put pen to paper when those proposals came forward and add a price tag to it. We don't have that right now. I do think that everyone knows that probably enforcement, and I think Polly alluded to this, that enforcement is one piece of the puzzle here. A better piece of the puzzle is responsible pet owners, mm-hmm. and the peer pressure that goes into this within any dog park or within this community as well. Enforcement's never going to meet the demand that's out there. It simply won't. But we can do a good job of helping educate and supporting where we can.
Mm-hmm. What does that education look like, Ann Ober, under this plan? I mean, how do you get dog owners on board to you know, abide by the new rules, to make sure that their dogs are playing well with others?
Great question. To start with, these rules exist today. So if you go into our off-leash areas, the expectation is that you have voice control over your dog. It's never been tested, it's never been necessarily enforced, but the expectation is when you go into a dog park, you're able to call your dog back and your dog's going to return. There's also a rule, and this came up during this process, of you clean up the feces of your dog. And one of the number one complaints that we got from dog owners and from non-dog owners is the difficulty of getting everybody to clean up poop. You know, our volunteers are amazing, they're doing a great job, but it's not their sole responsibility to do this. So education plays a huge role. Part of it is helping people know that those are the rules in the parks, and we'd have to spend a substantial amount of time in any of our new parks and in all of our existing parks to educate the public. But after that, there's also a certain amount of, once we've educated, we also have to make sure that you follow the rules. And if we spot you not following the rules, either our volunteers need to be empowered to go up to you and say, we need you to follow the rules and pick up the poop, Or we need animal enforcement to be able to say, this isn't acceptable, and we're going to ticket you. So I think it's always a hard balance between how much enforcement and how much education. We try and go education first, and that's been the priority for this office.
Emmy, I'm curious how your department, the Parks Department, uses volunteers currently. Is there anything comparable to this proposed ranger system in existence right now? And if there is, how's it working?
I would say I think the current model probably resides within the police department with their community watch program. And I don't have as much exposure to it as I probably would like at this point. I think it's serving an important community need, keeping more eyes out in the community and then giving them a structure to report back. And I think for as much as Anne mentioned in her presentation, we want to engage the community, give them the tools they need, because we don't want to put anybody in harm's way as far as becoming an advocate for appropriate use. But we do have, I think, more room for empowerment of volunteers. And I think, you know, Polly and I have had some significant conversations recently as to why some recent decisions, recent in the past year and a half, have been made that I think from Polly's end was a perception that we minimized volunteerism. And I think what we needed to do was create more structure to move forward. And we have a lot of community members, such as Polly, who have been very willing to restock the bag dispensers that we have throughout the community. So if we could get more structured, we could identify, here are all the bag dispensers, let's have somebody adopt each one. We know how it's working, we know how many bags we're distributing, we know what that means for our budget. So it's about creating the opportunities, putting it in a framework so that we can all do it collectively, collaboratively, and moving forward. I do also have the sense that FIDOS in particular wants more opportunities to conduct education and outreach. And so for as much as we have a program within the mayor's office called Service in the City, that is the way that we are working to empower citizens to be the advocates, to be the stewards. And so connecting citizens who are interested in volunteering with our Service in the City program is probably one of the most effective tools that we've been using lately. And we've gone from last year having something in the order of 1,300 volunteers within our parks and public land system to almost double that, and the year's not over. So we are really increasing the opportunities for volunteers. I think we need help in understanding how volunteers want to participate, and then we need to create the framework to make it a valid way for everybody to do that.
Polly, I'd like to hear more about your thoughts on meshing volunteers, a ranger program, as opposed to turning to unified police. I mean, what's your ideal scenario here? Because clearly, there's a need for enforcement if you're going to have more off-leash, is there not?
Yes, there is. And we, Mill Creek FIDOS actually used to do a lot more than just restock the bags. Rita Lund, one of our directors and founders, actually signed an agreement with the city when Mayor Anderson, Rocky Anderson, was mayor. And it, what we got was 88 legal off-leash acres in Parley's Park, Parley's Nature Park, and what the city got was that Mill Creek FIDOS was required to do four education days per year, where we had to have a group of people down in the park handing out flyers on how to be a responsible dog owner. We were required every day of the year to tell people when we saw them that their dog was off-leash in the parking lot that they needed to be leashed up until they were in the off-leash area. We were required to do two cleanup days every year where we went down and we picked up poop. We also did a lot of trail projects where the city would come down and bring, they would haul literally truckloads of tree branches that they had trimmed all the trees in the city, and we would take those piles and move all the tree branches to close off all of the social trails. The city said, we don't want these social trails keep people from going in them.
So you very much favor the volunteer approach?
We've asked to be allowed to do this again. When Mayor Becker initiated his new management plan, the study for the management plan, he specifically told Mill Creek Fidos to cease and desist with all of our volunteerism. And to this day, we still come back and say, we would like to do this. And I said to Emmy, you know I'm responsible. Give me the bags back. You know, I still want to, I don't know why, but I still want to restock the bags, and I still want to pick up the poop, and I still pick up the poop. You know, it's ingrained in us. You know, we want to volunteer. You know, I mean, please, let us volunteer.
Patrick, the role that volunteers play currently in County Animal Services, is there a role?
Oh, absolutely, there is a role. We don't use them in the enforcement side of that. That's obviously a very complex and dangerous area to be involved in. But
so that's not something you're interested in?
Well, no, I think we would be interested in working with volunteers on an education component and strengthening what we call our responsible pet ownership initiative, and we would love that. We certainly wouldn't want volunteers out trying to capture runaway dogs or anything like that, but we would welcome more support in the education area.
Okay. I want to turn to animal behavior, and I guess, Heather, this is kind of where you fit into this discussion.
I sure hope so.
We've talked a little bit about the proposal to require a test for a dog, whether or not they can respond by voice command, whether or not they can interact in a social way with other dogs. What does that kind of test look like? How do you test for something like that?
Well, that's definitely a good question. Ann and I had talked about this the other day, you know, maybe incorporating kind of the canine good citizens, but a much broader approach to that, because most of that test is actually on leash. So trying to come up with, you know, and probably this would be something where I would come into play, is being able to come up with some sort of test that would, you know, where you could actually figure out if a dog is off-leash reliable. And this has to come on a couple different levels. I would say, as far as clients that I work with, and this is kind of the other side of the off-leash deal, is that, you know, if your dog is somewhere off-leash and it approaches a dog who is on-leash and that dog is not friendly, you better be able to get your dog back. You know, and that's one of the biggest complaints that I hear from people that I work with, is the fact that they want to be out with their dogs and they're dog lovers and they want to be doing things, but unfortunately their dog has to be on leash. So on the other side of that, I think the responsibility, as much as it falls on the person to have their dog on leash, if we move towards these kind of, you know, tests and that kind of thing, I think the responsibility should be just as much on a person whose dog is off leash to make sure that their dog will return to them and won't go after wildlife, won't go after other dogs, won't go after kids, won't go after cats. So, you know, thinking about that as an overall subject, I think it'd be fairly easy to come up with something that would be able to test dogs for that.
Within the current 7 areas that are off-leash in Salt Lake City, would you say that most users are able to control their animals through voice command right now?
I would say the majority, yeah, but I would also say that the majority of people that actually live in those areas that own dogs don't attend the dog park. You know, I think that, you know, if you look at, you know, the area right around a certain dog park, I mean, I would say it's a very low percentage of people that actually utilize that dog park, you know, which I think a lot of these kind of issues come into play, where it's the enforcement. I mean, some people are just afraid. You know, they're afraid to take their dogs to the dog park because of other dogs that are there, the irresponsibility of, you know, not everybody, but certain people. It's scary for some people. So, yeah.
So what are the benefits, or on the flip side, the negative effects of having additional off-leash areas in the city from your vantage point as someone who really interacts with animals on a regular basis?
I am a huge fan of socialized dogs or happy dogs, and I think if we can start, you know, at certain levels where we have more of the availability for dogs to socialize in properly enforced environments, we can make happier, well-socialized, well-adjusted dogs. So that's a huge benefit. I don't really see any negatives. I mean, I think the more dog parks you have, I think the bite incidences go down. I think that there's a correlation between that, you know, so it's nothing but a benefit to have more availability for areas for dogs to socialize.
I want to turn to the health issues. Florence, dogs like to play in the water. So, with that in mind, what are the health issues associated with dogs and waterways? What kind of impact do dogs have when they're romping in the water?
I don't think there's any question that the real impact of dogs on our health and the impact to the waterways is with the feces that are left behind. The dog itself isn't going to create an issue. It's the feces that are left on the ground, that are washed into the streams, that carry potential diseases. We know that animal wastes can carry cryptosporidium and giardia and E. coli, salmonella and campylobacter. They can carry a lot of organisms that can impact human beings. While we look at our community, we're not discussing open parks in our watersheds, but we are talking about parks that are in the vicinity of our inner city streams. And we have an obligation as a community to maintain and improve the water quality in those streams as well as the water quality in the Jordan River.
That's Florence Reynolds from Salt Lake City's Public Utilities Department, one of several panelists participating in last night's community meetings on dogs and off-leash areas held here in Salt Lake City at the City Library. We'll put up the full discussion on our website, kcpw.org. Coming up next, stories and soul about jazz legend Billie Holiday. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. It's a powerful and moving tribute to the great jazz singer Billie Holiday. Though Lady Day sings the blues and recounts some of the low points in her painful life, there's joy and humor and, of course, that voice. Today on the program, we're talking about the larger-than-life talent that is Billie Holiday and the memories that haunted this complicated artist. Joining me in studio is Dee Dee Darby Duffin. She returns as Billie Holiday. She's well-known in Salt Lake acting circles. Past credits include The Third Crossing, winner of the 2012 Artie Award for Best Local Production, for Colored Girls Who Have Committed Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough with People Productions, and Saturday's Voyeur with Salt Lake Acting Company. And again, she is in the title role of Pygmalion Productions' Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Dee Dee Darby Duffin, thank you so much for your time and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Wrong microphone. There you go.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
You're welcome. Also with us, Teresa Sanderson, a performer, producer, director for over 30 years. She's recently played Mama Rose in Dark Horse Theater Company's production of Gypsy and Annie in Pygmalion Theater Company's production of In the Next Room or the Vibrator Play. And she is directing Pygmalion's Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Teresa, good to have you here as well. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Pygmalion Theater Company's production of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill opens tonight. Is that right?
Yes, tonight, it opens
tonight. October 25th, runs through Saturday, November 10th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. We'll give you details on that as we go. But if you'd like to join our conversation, if you've got a favorite Billie Holiday tune or have questions about this artist, you can call in. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Teresa Sanderson, I want to start with you. Before we get into the details of the play, give us just a bit of biographical information on Billie Holiday. She was born in Philadelphia, had a really rough, is that not true?
No, she was born in Baltimore.
In Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm conflating these two cities. Sorry about that, Baltimore. But she had a very rough childhood.
Yeah, she really did. Her father left. She never really knew her father until she gained fame, and then he came back into her life. But her mother really raised her and her grandmother. She was in Baltimore until she was about 6 years old and then went to New York City, I believe, to live with her mother. It was a rough life. She was sexually molested very early in her life. She, of course, lived in poverty all of her life until her fame. And singing really did save her life. It was her salvation. She began singing professionally in clubs at about 13 years old.
I found it interesting in the author's notes of this play, the author,
Lainey Robertson.
Lainey Robertson. She writes, the performances should be upbeat in every way. Joy and humor should be the prevalent emotions felt on the stage. And yet, so much of the subject matter is sobering. We're talking about addiction and prison time and, I mean, some really painful stuff. How do you keep that upbeat nature to it?
You know, Billy never looked at her life as a tragedy. She always looked at those things as things to overcome, and she really never did see how bad she was off. She just didn't see it that way. Yeah. She thought she was given a brilliant life. She loved her family. Her family loved her. She loved music. She loved what she got to do for a living.
What we consider tragedies as just stuff that happens.
Character building.
You just get over it, or you don't. But I think what she thought was, I'm just going to get over it and move on and do what gives me joy, do what brings me joy. And so a lot of what we consider to be these sordid stories, they were just a part of her makeup, and she just kept going.
Dee Dee, I want to ask you, I mean, you play this icon. In the play, Billie Holiday says, I'm a jazz singer. What I do is the blues feeling with the jazz beat. And she has such a distinctive voice.
She does.
As somebody who has to, how do you replicate that that emotion and that kind of tinniness that comes with it?
We laughed just now because initially this is our story here. I didn't like Billie Holiday's voice. I thought her voice was tinny, and as a vocalist who, you know, do these powerhouse ballads, and, you know, I grew up with all this pop influence and this R&B influence, I was not impressed by Billie Holiday initially. Until I got to know her story and why she sang the way she sang. And I think what I've grown fond of and what I've grown to respect is her musicianship, is the fact that she could go into a studio and record a song and she didn't read music, and I don't read music as well, so she would just hear the song and be able to record it once. And one of the best things she's ever said is, I never do the same song twice. The same way. And I think that's an amazing accomplishment for a musician, especially when you get this assembly line records that come out, that she would just say, I'm going to do it the way I feel. And if she was feeling kind of bluesy, then she would do it a little bit more bluesy. And if she was feeling a little bit, you know, up and she was on it, then she would do it with a little bit more sass. And I think having that kind of having that to play with was just amazing for her. And it's just been an amazing opportunity for me to be able to do that, to not be stuck in one box and just to be able to play with it. And I don't try to replicate her voice. I do try to give you some Billie vibes, but she's never been able to be duplicated. You just can't do it.
That's got to be such a mountain to climb. I want to give listeners a sense of your portrayal of Billie Holiday. It's early. You feel up to singing something?
Yeah,
for us?
Sure. No problem.
Okay, Dee Dee, what are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing the opening number, I Wonder Where Our Love Is Gone. And it starts off a little a cappella, so it gives you a sense of how the show's going to go.
This is Dee Dee Darby Duffin. She's starring as Billie Holiday in Pygmalion Theater Company's production of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill.
All I know is I'm in love with you, even though you say that we are through. I know without your love, I just can't go on. I wonder where our love has gone. Always thought you'd love me more and more. Never dreamed you'd ever let me go. I know without your love, I just can't go on. I wonder where our love has gone.
I could listen to that all day. That's Dee Dee Darby Duffin starring as Billie Holiday in the upcoming production Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, which opens courtesy of Pygmalion Theater Company. And it is opening tonight, October 25th, runs through Saturday, November 10th, at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center here in Salt Lake City. For tickets, call 801-355-ARTS. Go to arttix.org. There are links on our website as well, kcpw.org. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about Lady Day. We're talking about Billie Holiday, the jazz legend who had a very troubled life. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Let's go to the phones. Robert is joining us from West Valley. Robert, hi.
Hi. Hi, Ms. Darby. I was just listening. You made that comment about Billie Holiday. I'm 51, and I grew up in Georgia, and I've always heard about Billie Holiday. And the thing that struck me, too, is when I first heard her sing, I thought, wow, I didn't like it. But the more I listened to it, the more it touched me. And one of my favorite songs from Billie Holiday is Strange Fruit. And I probably listened to that song 36 times before I knew what it was about. But I wonder, are you going to be performing that song? Or have you performed it before?
It is one of the signature songs that Billie sings, and we do perform it in the show, so I hope you come and see it. It's beautiful. In fact, when Billie sang Strange Fruit, she made sure that the service stopped in the restaurant or the bar that she was singing in. All service stopped. There was one spotlight on her. We consider this song, Teresa and I consider the song Strange Fruit one of the first protest songs that predated the civil rights movement, because she sang this song even though the FBI had a dossier on her, and they followed her, and they would come to her shows, and they would harass her, and they would tell her, if you just stop singing this song, we'll leave you alone. And, you know, in Billie mode, she said, forget you, and she sang that song every night. It was her signature song. She sang it every time, and it was powerful, and she just refused to not sing it. And so it's a beautiful, haunting song, and I love doing it, but it's a tough song to sing.
Great. Well, I hope I get to come down and hear it then.
Me too, Robert.
I look forward to it. Thanks
so much for the call, Robert. 801-355-TALK is our number. There is a part in the play Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill where Billie Holiday is talking about the discrimination that she faced mm-hmm. in various performance venues. I mean, it was not enough that she was a star. So these civil rights issues really hit home for her.
Oh, they did. I mean, she couldn't even be in the clubs that she was singing in when she started singing. She was one of the first female singers. Well, one of the first female singers and one of the first black singers to sing with the big bands. And so when she traveled with Artie Shaw and did some music with Teddy, she couldn't sing. She couldn't sit in the club. She had to sit on the bus. She had to wait on the bus until it was time for her to sing. And then she could come in and sing. And then she'd have to come in through the back door. I mean, it was just kind of crazy that she was this headliner, but still being subjected to this kind of treatment.
It's hard to even imagine that in today's environment. Teresa Sanderson, Billie Holiday takes great comfort in Emerson's Bar and Grill. What makes this a haven for her, a safe place?
Well, one of the things that happened to her after she was sentenced to prison, the judge gave her a sentence of a year and a day, which made it a felony. And that took away her ability to sing in the clubs in New York City. They have to have a cabaret license in order to sing in the clubs in New York, and because she's a felon, they wouldn't allow her to do that. And so Philadelphia was one of the places where she could go that would still allow her to sing. And Emerson's, it actually still exists. It's not a bar, but it is still standing on the corner. And she did sing there a lot, and Hal Emerson was a good friend of hers and supported her through the tough times. The play actually takes place in the last 3 months of her life. And so you assume that this is one of the last concert gigs that she'll get.
Mm. Yeah. And Emerson's is actually not a club here in Salt Lake. It's the name of the show. And so people go, well, where's Emerson's? It's actually in Philadelphia. The show is at the Rose Wagner.
But we have created a club-like atmosphere. It is cabaret seating, and you will be able to buy a beverage and enjoy the show.
We've got about 30 seconds left. I guess to wrap up, Billie Holiday talks in the play about her dreams of settling down, you know, having kids, wanting to cook, and it's clear she's not going to realize those dreams. After performing in this role, Dee Dee, how are you thinking about the Billie Holiday story? Is she a tragic figure? Is she a survivor?
No, not at all. She's not tragic at all. She is formidable, and she is kick butt. I mean, she is one of the most formidable women. Female character, she's a shero. I mean, she really is. She's not tragic, and I don't think she'd ever want you to think of her life as tragic. I think she'd want you to think she did some good music and she interpreted some songs that made you think about love and just getting by.
Dee Dee Darby Duffin, she is Billie Holiday in Pygmalion Theater Company's production of Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. It opens tonight, October 25th, runs through Saturday, November 10th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center, 138 West Broadway here in Salt Lake City. More information and links on our website, kcpw.org. Dee Dee Darby Duffin and Teresa Sanderson, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you,
thanks
Jennifer.
For having us.
City Views is a production of KCPW in Salt Lake City. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce.